afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is DJ Shy John with the weekly news. This is September the 20th, 2012. And I have here before me Harper's Magazine to read you the weekly review by J.G. Vaccaro. The release of a 14-minute YouTube trailer for the film Innocence of Muslims, which portrays the Prophet Muhammad as a homosexual womanizer, which seems like a contradiction in terms, triggered mass demonstrations and riots across more than a dozen countries. Egyptian protesters scaled the walls of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo and lowered the American flag, replacing it with an Islamist banner. And in Libya, Islamist militants armed with rocket-propelled grenades stormed a U.S. consulate compound, killing four Americans, including Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens. The people in Benghazi, I think, said Fathi Baha, a Libyan politician, are very sad right now. Hundreds of protesters in Jakarta threw stones and Molotov cocktails at police who retaliated with tear gas. 4,000 protesters in Kabul burned cars and chanted death to America. And thousands of protesters in Kashmir called for the film's creator, Nakula Basile Nakula, to be put to death. Nakula, who has served time in prison for counterfeiting checks and has used pseudonyms including Crit Bag Diffrat, PJ Tobacco, and Sam Basile, went into hiding. Sam said that he was a cancer victim and was going to die, said Jimmy Israel, a member of Nakula's film crew. It gave us a lot of sympathy for him. One Innocence of Muslims actor claimed she thought she was shooting scenes for Desert Warrior, about a tribal battle that breaks out after a comet hits Earth. A murderer serving a life sentence in Oregon sued for the right to die by lethal injection after Governor John Kitzhaber issued a moratorium on executions until the future of capital punishment was decided. This is my constitutional right, said the prisoner. You know, we need to put this to sleep. That's probably the wrong expression. End quote. The Chicago Teachers Union went on strike for the first time in 25 years, locking city's 350,000 public school students out of their classrooms in a dispute over new employment contracts that would change the way teachers are hired and evaluated. In commemoration of 9/11, a fourth grade teacher in El Paso, Texas, asked students to draw depictions of planes hitting the North and South Towers of the World Trade Center. We had to draw the boom cloud, the planes hitting, and people jumping out of the windows, explained one student. He was under the impression that this happens every 9/11, added his mother. Somewhere between Pecos and Odessa, Texas, Halliburton employees lost a 7-inch rod of radioactive americium-241 beryllium. Sounds like Homer Simpson. A health department official noted that though the rod is not something that produces radiation in an extremely dangerous form, any resident who stumbles upon it should stay back 20 or 25 feet. Air quality control officials identified the Salton Sea as the source of a recent large and unusual odor event that blanketed Southern California with the smell of rotten eggs. South Korean authorities announced that they would allow a drunk North Korean who floated to South Korea in his underpants to stay in the country. And the District Attorney of Queens, New York, concluded operations last call, arresting 18 workers at Kennedy International Airport who are alleged to have stolen 100,000 miniature liquor bottles. Groundskeepers at Chicago's O'Hare Airport were looking for a herd of sheep or goats to help mow the lawn, and New Delhian customs officials who recently confiscated 11 bird eggs, 10 turtles, 6 Persian cats, and 3 venomous tarantulas from passengers detained a man attempting to smuggle a loris in his pants. Are you happy to see me? Northern Irish rugby player Nevin Spence drowned in a slurry pit alongside his brother and father while attempting to rescue the family dog. And a woman in Nigeria gave birth to a horse in church. We have seen people vomit several things during our service, said the woman's pastor, but not this type of thing. An East London market was caught selling illegal exotic meats, including cane rat, a rodent native to the Sahara that can weigh up to 15 pounds, and smoky, which is made by blowtorching a goat. A poll of Ohio Republicans found that 15% believe that Mitt Romney deserves more credit for killing Osama bin Laden than does Barack Obama. And former Republican Senator Rick Santorum told a gathering of conservatives in Washington, "We will never have the elite, smart people on our side." Mitt Romney admitted to being a fan of Jersey Shore cast member Snooki. "Look how tiny she's gotten," he said. "She's lost weight. She's energetic. Just her spark plug personality is kind of fun." Oy. Now, in other news, I wanted to take up this subject matter here. I found it here on the Daily Ticker in Yahoo Finance. And the question is, are 47% of Americans government moochers? A leaked video of remarks Republican nominee Mitt Romney made at a private fundraising event set the internet abuzz, it says yesterday, but this was on the 17th. In the video, Romney described nearly half the country, or 47%, as people who won't take responsibility for themselves, who are dependent on government, who believe they are victims, who believe the government has a responsibility to care for them, and who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. The remarks confirmed the belief of many Americans that Romney doesn't understand or care about people on the lower end of the income scale. Isn't that rather obvious? And it also set off furious debate about whether Romney had simply told the truth, or whether he doesn't actually understand the makeup of the truth, or excuse me, of the country he lives in. It's easy to be frustrated by and worried about the rise in the number of Americans who receive benefits from the government. Here are 18 charts showing this trend. If you want to go there, that would be to the Daily Ticker in Yahoo Finance. For one thing, it's depressing that so many Americans need benefits. Also, given the depth of our budget problems, if we can't figure out how to solve that problem, we're going to bankrupt ourselves. So Romney is right that this is a major issue and concern. But there's a difference between trying to solve a major economic problem and demonizing those who are on the poorer end of the income scale. Whether inadvertently or not, Romney blamed Americans who are poor or old for being poor or old. Worse, he framed their financial status as the result of their personal character. There are lots of jobs in this country that pay wages low enough that the people who do them won't pay much federal income tax. Entry-level jobs across many industries, for example, retail jobs, local service jobs, education jobs. Most of the people who do these jobs are taking full responsibility for themselves. They're also doing necessary work, working hard, and in many cases, being successful at it. So dismissing these 100 plus million Americans as freeloaders who aren't taking responsibility for themselves is understandably offensive to a lot of people. The idea of broadening the tax base, however, and reducing the income threshold at which Americans pay federal income tax is sound. When people pay for something, they feel a sense of ownership and participation that they don't feel when it is just given to them. So if Republicans want to argue that everyone should pay something, that's an idea a lot of the country could probably get behind if we all had jobs, eh? So this may be another case in which careless phrasing has gotten Romney in trouble. Regardless, the remarks won't likely help the Romney campaign, for which we can all be grateful. Anyway, now I have another sister article to go with that. I think you might care to know, and I think there's a similarity here between these two statistics I'm about to state. In HuffPost Business, and this is dated 9/12, U.S. poverty, census finds 46.2 million impoverished as median income drops. Well, okay, that was 46.5% and 46, 47.40, pardon me, Washington AP. The ranks of Americans poor remain stuck at record levels, although dwindling unemployment benefits and modest job gains help stave off what experts had predicted would be the fourth rise in a row in the poverty rate. With joblessness persistently high, the gap between rich and poor increased in the last year, according to two major census measures. Also, the median or midpoint household income was $50,054, 1.5% lower than 2010, and a second straight decline. A Census Bureau report released Wednesday provides a mixed picture of the economic well-being of U.S. households for 2011, when the unemployment rate improved to 8.9% from 9.6% in the previous year. The numbers are coming out not long before the November 6 election, in which the economy is the number one issue, and President Barack Obama is trying to make the case that the labor market, while not fully healed, is on the right track. The overall poverty rate stood at 15%, statistically unchanged from the 15.1% in the previous year. The rate was better than a consensus estimate of demographers who had predicted, based on weak wage growth, a gain of up to half a percentage point to levels not seen since 1965. For last year, the official poverty line was an annual income of $23,021 for a family of four. You note they don't count a family of one in those poverty figures, but it costs as much to live in the city for anybody. By total numbers, roughly 46.2 million people remain below the poverty line, unchanged from 2010. That figure was the highest in more than a half a century when records were kept. The 15% poverty rate was basically unchanged from 1993 and was the highest since 1983. Broken down by state, New Mexico had the highest share of poor people at 22.2%, according to rough calculations by the Census Bureau. It was followed by Louisiana, the District of Columbia, South Carolina, Arkansas, and Georgia. On the other end of the scale, New Hampshire had the lowest at 7.6%. This is good news and a surprise, said Sheldon Danziger, a University of Michigan economist who closely tracks poverty. He pointed to a continuing boost from new unemployment benefits passed in 2009 that gave workers up to 99 weeks of payments after layoffs and didn't run out for many people until late 2011. Also, gains in the private sector that helped offset cuts in state and local government workers. It would indicate the stimulus was even more effective than believed, he said. Bruce D. Meyer, an economist at the University of Chicago, said it was disappointing that poverty levels did not improve. He decided it was a sign of lingering problems in the labor market, even with recent declines in unemployment. The drop in the unemployment rate has been due in significant part to workers leaving the labor force because they are discouraged, back in school, taking care of family, or other reasons, he said, like my friend who's trying to get on SSI. The official poverty level is based on a government calculation that includes only income before tax deductions. It excludes capital gains or accumulated wealth, such as home ownership. As a result, the official poverty rate takes into account the effects of some stimulus programs passed in 2009, such as unemployment benefits, as well as jobs that were created or saved by government spending. It does not factor in non-cash government aid, such as tax credits and food stamps, which is a whole nother matter, right? David Johnson, chief of the Census Bureau's Household Economic Division, attributed the better-than-expected poverty numbers to increases in full-time workers over the last year. He also estimated that expanded unemployment benefits helped keep 1.6 million working-age people out of poverty. Excuse me. Tucker, I'm in the middle of recording the news. I'm going to have to edit this out. Let me call you back. Way cool. Yeah, it came out really even. All right, thanks. Okay. Oh, my. A little plug for my other show. That was Tucker Booth, my co-host, calling in to say that the podcast came out great. Just so you know. Social Security also lifted roughly 14.5 million seniors above the poverty line. Without those cash payments, the number of people ages 65 and older living in poverty would have increased fivefold, he said. Well, they're all teetering on the brink, aren't we? Johnson also noted that income inequality was widening. He said the top 1% of wage earners had a 6% increase in income over the last year, while income at the bottom 40% of earners was basically unchanged. How about that? A lot of the increase is driven by changes at the very top of the distribution, he said. The share of Americans without health coverage fell from 16.3% to 15.7%, or 48.6 million people. It was the biggest decline in the number of uninsured since 1999, boosted in part by increased coverage for young adults under the new health care law that allows them to be covered under their parents' health insurance until age 26. Well, now that sounds like a cover story to me, doesn't it to you? The 48.6 million people, that's about as many people as lost jobs and got laid off, and new jobs opening up are opening up part-time, so they're not offering any benefits. So I think that would probably explain a lot more of the offset. Congress passed the health overhaul in 2010 to address the rising numbers of uninsured people. During this election year, the law has come under increasing criticism. Republicans, including a presidential nominee, Mitt Romney, who has pledged to push a repeal if he is elected, the main provisions of the health care law will not take effect until 2014. Now, mind you, this article started out with U.S. poverty census finds 46.2 million impoverished as median income drops. And then they end up talking about health care. Well, that largely covers working people who are going to get proper coverage. You know it's going to be a two-tiered or three-tiered system. Anyway, on to more good news here, or not. From KRDO.com, which is Colorado Springs study, military drinking culture now a crisis. Washington, a new study says substance abuse among troops has become a public health crisis, and Pentagon methods for dealing with it are outdated. The study by the Institute of Medicine, part of the National Academy of Sciences, says about 20% of active duty service members reported they drank heavily in 2008, the last year for which data is available, and binge drinking rose to 47% in 2008 from 35% in 1998. Well, that's a 10-year difference. The study says new methods are needed to help troops. These include better trained counselors and more outpatient care, as opposed to relying so heavily on hospitalizations and residential programs. This is copyright 2012 by the Associated Press. And this came out in Colorado Springs because there's a huge Air Force Academy and base over there. And the person who sent this to me, my web assistant, tells me that on a PX base, you can buy alcohol 24/7. Isn't that great? Now, what's left here? One more. Okay, now I've got one more little bit of fluff for you all. Of course, this comes to us from Yahoo News. TV reruns may replenish tired minds. This from Sunday, September 16th. By the Live Sciences staff. Obviously, nobody wanted to put their name on it. Watching a favorite rerun of a TV show is like slipping on a pair of sweatpants for the mind. And new research shows it could prime a person to tackle a difficult task by helping to restore self-control and willpower. People have a limited pool of these valuable mental resources. Jay Derrick, a scientist at the University of Buffalo's Research Institute on Addictions, said in a statement, "When they use them on a task, they use up some of this limited resource. Therefore, they have less willpower and self-control for the next task." Derrick explained that these mental resources do return over time, but some activities, like watching a rerun, can speed up their restoration. When you watch a favorite rerun, you typically don't have to use any effort to control what you were thinking, saying, or doing, Derrick said. You are not exerting the mental energy required for self-control or willpower. At the same time, you are enjoying your interaction with the TV show's characters, and this activity restores your energy. In one of the studies Derrick conducted, she had a group of participants keep a daily diary about their effortful tasks, media consumption, and energy levels. These logs revealed that the participants were more likely to seek out a rerun of their favorite television show or to revisit a favorite movie or book if they had to do effortful tasks during the day. In another part of the research, participants had to either complete a task that required concentration or a similar, less structured task that didn't require so much effort. Then half of the participants wrote about their favorite TV show, while the others listed items in their room, considered a neutral task, to see if either task renewed or reduced their willpower and energy. The researchers had participants complete a writing task. Those who had written about their fave television show wrote for longer if they had completed a structured task than if they had done the less structured, less effortful task. In other words, there was a measurable restorative effect from a familiar fictional world, Derrick said in a statement. But vegging out indiscriminately in front of any TV show didn't have the same effect, the researcher found. Just watching whatever is on television does not provide the same benefit, Derrick said. And perhaps surprisingly, watching a new episode of a favorite television show for the first time does not provide the same benefit. Her research was published in the journal Psychological and Personality Science. Well, I guess that just about does it for the day, ladies and gentlemen. All right, but in the meantime, I wish you all a good week. And like I say in my other show, be good to one another. Don't be a part of the news.